You're listening to Draft Chaff. Coming up this week.
I wasn't going to say gnome reason yet.
One new set's not enough, apparently, these days. We've already started getting Karloff Manor spoilers. Yeah, they finally let this one out of the garage. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Draft Chaff. This is episode number 181. My name is Zach. I'm one of your hosts. And joining me, as per usual, Ben Fisher. What's up, dude?
A lot of things are up, man. A lot of things. I think it's time for a good, like a potpourri style episode. We got to bounce back and forth between, God, how many things happened in Magic this week? Like 8?
11-6.
Yeah.
I think was the final count, yeah.
181, it feels like.
Ooh, nice tie-in. Well, before we do get to our hodgepodge episode here, of course, our usual housekeeping. If you're not already in the Discord, do check it out. It's the best place to be to chat all things MTG. Come say hi. We love to see new folks jumping into Discord. We've been seeing a lot of new people jump into the Discord. Quite a few, actually, who have said they are longtime listeners and just haven't made it into the Discord yet. So if you've been on the fence about joining, just jump in, say hi. Like, it's a great group over there. So we'd love to see
except
you. You're not too late.
Except for that one person, you know.
Oh, boy. He's talking about me.
It's Zach. Yeah.
The link to that is on our Twitter page as well as in the episode description, so do check that out. And if you'd like to support the show directly, you can do so on a Patreon at patreon.com/draftchaffpod. Huge, huge, huge thanks to everybody who continues to support us over there each and every week. We are just beyond grateful for all of you. So thank you so much. And a huge shout out to Jason, our latest patron. Really appreciate you and your support. So thanks a lot. You can check out different perks over there. Things like our Draft Chaff Hero stickers, custom made. We are going to be kind of spoiling probably the Draft Chaff Hero. I don't think we'll have announced the Draft Chaff Hero by the time we get the final proof of the sticker. So we may be spoiling that ahead of the episode, but we're going to showcase what that looks like to everybody in the Discord as well as on our Patreon page. So if you're interested to see what those look like, check it out. We're not going to be retroactively sending them to people. So if you join in like the next set, you're not going to get this sets. You'll get all the sets from that when you join on. So if you want to get this one in particular, then you know you're going to want to join now before the next set drops.
And let's just say you're not going to want to miss this sticker. It's
pretty great.
I can't wait to get all the spares so I can just stick them on everything. It is so cute.
It's really good, really well done. But we have a bunch of other perks over there, so you can check that out on patreon.com/draftchaffpod. Again, most of the funding, we're trying to put pretty much everything into making the bounty board as interesting as possible, make the rewards there as interesting as possible. So a lot of your support helps us not only keep the show running, but then we'll also be a way we can give back to the community through the bounty boards in terms of prizes there. So do check that out. Also, another small announcement. It is December, which means our holiday mailbag episode is just a few weeks away. So jump into the Discord and check out our 2023 holiday mailbag channel where you can drop your questions for the holiday mailbag. Doesn't have to be Magic related, can be whatever you want it to be. We're going to go through as many of them on that episode as we can. We're also going to do sort of a raffle to give away some arena codes. So we're going to give 3 people who ask a question in the 2023 holiday mailbag channel 3 arena codes each. So that's 9 total codes going to 3 people. Check it out. And you can only win once, by the way. So, but do jump into that channel, ask any kind of questions you want, and we'll be happy to get to them on the show at the end of the month. So that one comes out at the end of the month after Christmas. So check that out there. All right. On to our crack draft type thing. Ben, what do we have going on?
Did you see what happened in the show notes?
Sort of.
Well, there used to be a crack-a-pack there, but I replaced it with a surprise. I've actually got here a paper pack, which
okay,
a bit of a rarity these days. You know, I think compared to the number of packs we crack on Arena, a paper just, you know, these fall by the wayside. But here, let me make sure the mic gets all this goodness.
Yeah, that came right through.
Yeah, that sounded pretty good. Let's go ahead and get through this pack now. So first card out, we got a Miner's Guidewing. That thing is great. I love this little guy. It's a 1 mana, 1/1 flying vigilance. with the dies effect. I mean, this is just emblematic of this set, right? A one mana, one, one flyer with a good death trigger. You can stack counters on this thing or equipment on this thing and just go to town. This is the format, right? It's a one drop format.
Pretty much. Yeah. It wears a lot of those nice early one mana equipments, like you mentioned, and Atali's Favor too, you know, any of those kinds of cards just get slapped onto this thing pretty easily. And you feel pretty good about it because you start getting in for damage pretty quickly. It's an evasive threat. And yeah.
Next up is Mephitic Draft. That's the artifact. When it ETBs or goes to the grave, you draw a card and lose a life. Pretty cool with the repeatable sack effects in black, especially the black-white deck. A big fan of this one in that deck, but I feel like every time I play it, it's more fun than good.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you had the nice, like, when you can do the whole flicker thing with it, I guess that's fun. But outside of that, yeah, I think it just kind of feels like more fun than good.
Sometimes I'll be like, all right, I'm gonna have this thing. I'm gonna like sacrifice it and then get it back. And then my opponent's going like 2/2 flyer, 3/3 flyer, yeah. 5/5 dinosaur. you die. We've got an Iron Paw Aspirant here. The 2-mana 1/2 ETB put a counter on something. Actually, the perfect follow up to Miner's Guidewing. If you have any of these 1-mana 1/1 flyers, of which there are what, 3 in the set? 2 at uncommon and this one at common. Iron Paw Aspirants are the perfect follow-up. You just put the counter right on the 1/1 flyer, and I mean, yeah, I guess they could kill it, but how much damage are you going to get in beforehand? Like, they need probably a braid, or sometimes you can even outgrow the flyer such that a dead weight doesn't even kill it. Iron Paw Aspirant, big part of that. Oh, we've got a Hotfoot Gnomes here. 3-mana 3/1 haste. You can tap it to give another target creature haste and it's on a turn. It's fine.
I mean, it goes okay in any of the red-white decks. Not really enthusiastic to put it in my red-green decks very often. It's just fine. Blue, like, it's a replaceable card. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's decent in red-blue, too. It's an artifact. Yeah, it's a fast creature.
Yeah, I mean, you're not usually attacking with this. And there's just so many 1/1s and X1s. Like, look how a Miner's Guidewing interacts with this, right?
Right.
Haven't really loved this one. Doesn't do a lot. 3/1 is a pretty bad stat line to have in the set. The Mischievous Pup has been really underperforming, too, I hate to say. Man, I had such high hopes for that thing. The Hotfoot Gnome, I mean, this is a good 1-mana effect when you get, like, a little 1-mana 1/1 haster that has this on it. But at the 3-mana slot, it's just, nah, you don't want that. We've got Narazka Puzzle Door here. Find Glue Piece, the 1-mana artifact in blue, and you can pay 1, tap, sack it, look at the top 2, put 1 in the hand, 1 in the graveyard. Fine for like the blue-black Fathomless Descent style decks where you want to find certain cards, like your Chupacabra Echoes and your other, you know, big bombs and recursion engines. But then you also want to be dumping as much stuff possible in the graveyard. So nice little card, and you know, it's just so cheap, you know?
Yeah. Nothing about this pack so far is exciting, though.
I'm on the guide wing.
Of course. So yeah, far. Yeah, but I still don't want to be first picking a 1-mana 1/1 common.
Yeah, although it is better than it looks, it's still not, you know, this is a bit of a princey set where you can definitely get some high bombs. In fact, I think that's a knock against the set, but maybe
where's my Dracosaurus?
Yeah, exactly, right? Man, here's the exact opposite of a Prince card, Buried Treasure. This is some draft chaff right here.
Leave it buried. Move on.
Yeah, I mean, I've used this one maybe once or twice, but like, no, it's just not worth the card slot. 2-mana for a treasure where you can just tap, sack, add a mana of any color. That is obviously not a good card. But then it also has pay 5, exile from your graveyard to discover 5. Now, I think what people sometimes thought when looking at this is that you activate this from your... You cast it, right? You play it. It acts sort of like a mana, like resource holder. And then you could ramp into a 5-drop on turn 4 or something, or a 4-drop on turn 3, because it does kind of ramp you when you look at it like that. And then you flash back from your graveyard. So it gives you like a really brief mana advantage. At a tempo loss.
Yeah.
But then it gives you a really bad mana disadvantage, because when you discover five, what's your average expected hit? Like, especially in this set,
2.5.
Where, yeah, maybe even lower.
Maybe,
like,
yeah,
in a deck full of Miner's Guidewings, you don't want to hit a 1/1 off this. Like, for the same reason, the lands are, the tap lands that discover are a bit worse in these hyper aggro decks. I still play one or two, but like when you discover into a Miner's Guidewing on turn 8, it's like, oh,
well, but my opponent's doing more stuff. We've talked about this with a lot of recent sets, like those random lands that just instant, like for all intents and purposes, they say draw a card on them.
Mm-hmm.
That's just great because you want lands in your deck, and you want your lands to be able to do more than just tap for mana. That's fine. Mm-hmm. That's not really taking a card slot in your deck, whereas this is. And
yeah,
I think if they cost, like I've been complaining about these the whole since we did the format breakdown, but like if they costed these a little bit better, like if that was 4 mana, tap, sack, do or exile from the graveyard, discover 5, or 3 mana, discover 5, I'd feel really happy. Like I want to be able to every so often get my mana out of it, or and sometimes even like get rewarded, like get an advantage out of it. Mm-hmm. You can never do that with this card. You're always going to at best pay 5 mana for a 5-drop.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're never, let's be honest, that's rarely going to happen.
Especially in limited, yeah. In constructed, maybe sure you can build your deck such that you've just got a bunch of 5-drops and nothing else, but in limited, you're not playing 6, 7, 8 5-drops. It's just not happening.
Yeah. Plundering Pirate is up next. That's the 3-mana 3/2 ETB make a treasure. Sort of like the angry Sailor of Means.
Yeah.
A 3/2 instead of a 1/4. I don't know. I preferred Sailor Means much more, but this is a good glue piece. It's great in the Pirates deck and in exactly blue red. Captain Storm into this is just nuts. And then you get to start ramping out other stuff or sacking it or putting like a, I don't know, glyph on the treasure and just go to town. It's just a fine playable. It's like gonna make a lot of the red decks.
Yeah, this is a card you pretty much never cut, but it's not anything exciting.
How about a Malamet Brawler? Something I almost always cut and is maybe occasionally exciting. I mean, this thing can actually combine with Death Touchers decently well. When it attacks, target attacking creature gains trample on a turn. Sometimes you can pump up a Death Toucher in like black green or even in green. I don't know, there's some tricks to it. There's some play to it, but it's I rarely play this thing.
Yeah. Pretty pastel.
Ooh, here's a pretty solid one, though. Pathfinding Axe Draw. The 4-mana 4/3 ETB Explorer Dinosaur. Like this one, especially ramping it out on turn 3 with either the dinosaur tapping 1-mana dork or the Poison Dart Frog.
Yeah. No, getting this thing out quick is pretty great. And even playing it on curve is pretty awesome, too.
Yeah.
My problem with this card is I can never seem to wheel it, and there's almost always something better for the dino deck in the same packs that I open this in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like this thing a lot. Either a 4-mana 5/4 with a relevant type or 4-mana 4/3 draw card. Still not taking it over the Guidewing, though. I think I actually am probably still on Guidewing.
Pack one, pick one, I think I am too.
We've got a Tithing Blade as our last common here. That's the one of the black ETB edict your opponent. They sack something and craft with a creature. Don't love this one. I mean,
no.
The creatures are just too high value. The hands get dumped too quickly in a board full of all, you know, kind of generic 1/1s and 1/2s and 2/1s that their stats aren't really their value. It's that you dumped your hand full of them and they're hard to block and they just get in for a lot of damage. Making your opponent sack their worst one of those, their pick, is
yeah. I mean, we see this good historically. Like edicts are generally not good cards, and we've seen occasionally WotC has fixed that problem by saying like they sacrifice the creature with the highest power or the highest mana value or something like that.
Right.
And those get around that. They're like they're the quote unquote good edicts. And I was a little bit higher on this card when we did the format breakdown and we were like reviewing the set because it seemed like this was a set where like decks weren't really able to go wide and we're like, okay, if their board is full of dinosaurs, I don't really care which one they get rid of because it's going to be helpful to get rid of any of them.
And it is good against dinosaurs.
It's decent against black green even, but nobody's playing black green. It's not so great against red blue or red white because or blue white even, because they're just generating a ton of gnomes. Yeah. They can just sack gnomes for no, you know, and like
gnome reason.
I was gonna say gnome reason. Yeah. But they like, you know, you can do that. And then even like the red white decks, they can tap the gnomes to do the thing a lot of the time, like whenever they want to do that in response. Some of those are at sorcery speed, but yeah, I don't know. It's it just, yeah, it hasn't felt very good. Again, another great one to flicker if you get the Abuelo combo, but
like still, day one, yeah. That was awesome. The most boards, I think the average board state in this format does not look good to Edict.
No.
First uncommon out here is Curator of Sun's Creation, the 4-mana 3/3 that says whenever you discover again for that same value. I have actually had this one pop off a couple times where I've had like two of these and then two or three Itali's Favor and then like a couple of the lands, and you don't actually need anything else because even just one discover, like one discover three with this thing in play, that's a whole extra card, a whole extra two-ish mana. And then that's actually some real value. Yeah, it's a 4-mana 3/3 with no like relevant abilities or types or anything. But this is maybe one of the more janky cards in the set, and I've gone down this road, and it's been pretty effective. This is like the top end of a deck.
True. I tend to treat this card more as an enchantment than anything else that can sometimes block if I need it to.
Yeah. Like, it really is.
Yeah.
Ooh, next one here, Hermitic Nautilus. I love this little guy. The 1 in the blue, 1/4 vigilance, and you can pay 1 in the blue to give it +3/-3. And it happens to be an artifact creature. So this thing is just a really annoying attacker and blocker. And somehow, when the red-blue deck dumps its whole hand and then is like, you know, doing all this wacky onboard stuff, they make a bunch of treasures. This thing wears equipments pretty well. It wears counters pretty well. No, I can't get counters. This thing wears equipments really well, just smacking in. And it makes combat really annoying. Some of the red-white decks, actually, they hate seeing this card because it's just a 1/4. Like, it's functionally a removal spell in the first several turns of the game. But then it just becomes a good late-game mana sink. So, big fan of the Nautilus. I think it would actually be my pick out of this pack so far.
Yeah, I think so. I would rather be in blue-red than some of these white decks. Although white-blue is pretty good. White-red can be good. They're all pretty fine. This one just seems to have more possibilities to it. Keeps you a little more open, I think, than the Guidewing does.
Mm-hmm. How about a Volatile Fault? The uncommon cave that taps for colorless, and you can tap, sack it, destroy non-basic that an opponent controls. They go get a land, and you get a treasure. I'm good. I've seen the caves decks. I've seen the screenshots. It's still a meme though. I'm sticking to it. Like a caves deck, when it really goes off, everyone goes like, "Whoa, there goes the caves deck." But we're seeing when it works. Nobody posts screenshots of when it does.
Right.
I'll tell you.
I was like, go pull up the 17 lands data on the caves deck, and then let's talk. But unless you're Sam Black, I don't want to hear it.
Unless you're like, I think maybe the most likely outcome is that you have like a caves package. And I think that can work in like the decks that are already trying to go deep on the graveyard, like the blue-green. Blue-green kind of sucks. The blue-black and black-green decks, blue-black being the best of that group. If you can get together a pile of cards and caves, you can do some pretty cool stuff. And then you end up splashing stuff like the Calamitous Cave in just for some extra power. And yeah, that's the payoff for doing that. But like the mystical pure 5-color caves deck, I tried it myself. It felt awful against these like hyper-tuned red-white beatdown decks. So pack so far, I think I'm on the Nautilus. It's not the best pack in the world. There's some action though, like the Guidewing and the Pathfinding Axe Draw. We've got a hidden Necropolis. That's the black hidden land. Our second cave for this one. You know how when you're playing a game of Magic and your opponent resolves a card that basically invalidates the entire thing that happened before. Like, all of your thoughts and game actions on both sides of the table just meant nothing because of, like, their dream trawler level bomb.
Sure.
I've been noticing that that can happen in packs, too, where you go, oh, man, all these cards, oh, what am I taking? Oh, there's a Preacher of the Schism. Schism? Schasm? let's go with Schism. Schism? I think it's Schism, right? That's the 2 and a black, 2/4 death touch at rare. And when it attacks the player with the most life or tied for the most life, you make a 1/1 vampire with lifelink. And when it attacks while you have the most life or are tied for the most life, you draw a card and lose a life. So this thing, it never doesn't trigger. You are always on attack getting either a 1/1 lifelinker if you're behind on life total, which is good, or you're getting a draw one, lose one if you're ahead on life total, which is also good. Did I mention it's a 3-mana 2/4 death touch? Like,
yeah.
What do you do? Like, do you put your 5-mana 4/4 in front of this and just go like, all right, I guess that's the trade? Do you double block it and just like pray there's no trick? You could also just leave this card back to block and it trades with anything. This card is so much better than anything else in this pack. You would just slam this, and even black being the worst color in the set, I believe, you'd be pretty stoked about it.
Yeah. Also, I mean, the sort of frustrating part too, like, just going off of memory here, because you open the pack in paper, our potential wheel options are like Hidden Necropolis, Mephitic Draft, and like Tithing Blade. And
yeah,
that's kind of it. And you're not going to get the Necropolis back. So
you're not going to get the Guide Wing or the Axe Jaw. Yeah, it doesn't feel great.
Yeah, I mean, overall, the problem is that the power level of the packs are very flat, at least mm-hmm. this pack in particular. And so the rare, even being marginally better than anything in the pack, is going to feel incredibly better by comparison, because there's just such a flat power level in the rest of the pack.
And like, this is a great card, but like, I don't know. I think it highlights an issue with this format, which is oftentimes you're slamming the rare and moving on. And then sometimes, you know, you just cast it and win, like this card, for example. It dodges a braid. because of the speed of the format, removal has also kind of fallen off. Tell you what, why don't we just transition into our main topic for today? You know what? Get lost.
Captain, we don't really have a main topic today.
Yeah, it's more like 15 main topics. I do think a place we should start, though, is the state of Lost Caverns. But it does kind of feel like a lot of players and even WotC is starting to look at Lost Caverns and like, all right, enough of you.
I don't think WotC cares about their sets anymore in terms of longevity. Like, because they designed sets so far in advance, this was planned, but whether the limited format went well or not, like, they were going to be spoiling new cards already. So,
yeah. Yeah. And maybe that's a good thing, but Lost Caverns came out only a mere month ago. And honestly, the set, it already feels kind of solved. Whether this is a product of our new digital age of limited data, or if this is just a product of perpetual spoiler season, or maybe LCI is kind of, you know, repetitive play pattern-esque limited environment. Maybe this contributed to, I don't know, WotC's new wave of announcements that just came out, and it seemed like there were a ton of them. So this episode is going to catch you up to speed because, it's our jobs to do that, to make sure you're an informed magician or something.
Planeswalker, Ben. Planeswalker. Oh, wait, those don't exist anymore.
Pretty,
never mind.
Pretty sure we're magicians, Zach. Anywho, regarding Lost Caverns, I had some fun with this set, and there are certainly some fun things that you can do. But I think just a quick look at the 17 lands trophy leaderboard, and you'll see very quickly that it's just Jeskai artifact deck after Jeskai artifact deck. And that's not to say they're all literally Jeskai. There's blue, red, and blue, white, and every combination of that, splash a little bit of a bomb and another color, or... I mean, it's kind of like the Jeskai format, right? Where there's these blue-red pirates decks that want to get on the ground early, resolve a Captain Storm, and just smack for a million. there's these blue-white decks, which actually can be a bit more assertive or reactive. The reactive ones get to really leverage the Master's Guide mural, which is a really cool card, got to admit, to just make as many 4/4s as they want in the late game and just go way over the top of... I mean, I was playing a really good Dinosaurs deck, and they just kept making 4/4s, and like, what do you do? It's just too much power and toughness to attack through. And then you've got these white-red hyper-aggressive beatdown decks that, are just able to push through so much damage and also leverage Discover really well, thanks to Kaprakthi Sunborn and Itali's Favor. And these decks have done a pretty solid job of pushing a lot of the other decks out of the format. Something like Blue-Green is just doing awful right now in the stats. Some of them they can manage. There are ways to combat this, particularly gaining life. So something like Echo of Dusk, the 2-mana 2/2 that if you descend 4, it gets 1/1 in lifelink. This is a way that the black decks can kind of fight against these hyper-assertive Jeskai decks, where if you can turn that on quickly, then you can kind of just race. And a 3/3 lifelinker is actually really good at racing those sort of hyper-focused decks, because they just sometimes can't deal with this thing. Or maybe it trades for an Abrade, but removal isn't in super high popularity in this set, just because so many of the best decks are just playing these replaceable pieces, right? For example, the... it's called Over the Edge. Join the Dead. The classic black common removal spell, Join the Dead, the 3-mana gives something -5/-5. This is just not very good against a Miner's Guide Wing or a Spyglass Siren. Even if that thing has worn a couple counters or has like an equipment on it or something, your opponent probably still got all the value they wanted out of it if they smacked you for 7 or 8 in the air with it, and then you kill it with your top tier kill spell. Well, then that wasn't a great exchange on your behalf, right? And you probably still traded down on mana. So removal just isn't that big in this set. And that kind of also contributes to the fact that when a bomb does hit the field, the game kind of just ends because, well, removal is de-incentivized because of the hyper-aggressive speed. But then when the bomb hits, there's not a lot of removal in your deck to deal with it. So you kind of need to be stratifying here for both things. You need to be able to deal with these hyper-assertive beatdown, but then you also need to be able to deal with the occasional 6-mana bomb that your opponent resolves, like a Dracosaur or something. So the set, it sort of has some what I would call unfun play patterns to it. And that's coming from me, who absolutely loves playing these hyper-aggressive Jeskai beatdown artifacts decks. Like, I've been forcing this in quick draft and just raking in the gems. But I can also admit that this is not good for a format. This is not, you know, really what a format should look like. Plus, just the fact that, you know, it's repetitive. And when you get beaten down by 1-mana 1/1 flyers this many times, you know, that tends to lead to a disinterest in the format.
Well, luckily we are not stuck with it long, because we've got a new set coming out next week, just a few days after this episode releases. Khans of Tarkir is making its way back to Arena. Well, not back, making its way to Arena for the first time.
Wild.
Which is pretty crazy. It's commonly, if you have not had the pleasure of drafting Khans of Tarkir, and I say that having only really drafted it once myself, so Khans kind of came out a bit, technically not before I was playing Magic, but it was like right around when I think I had introduced Ben to Magic. Because I introduced you in Theros, right?
Yeah.
And Khans was post-Theros, but we weren't really drafting at the time. And so we never really got to draft this set, but it's commonly regarded as one of, if not the best limited environments ever made. And I'm very excited to get my hands on it. It comes out December to the 12th, and it's a pretty sweet set. So we're not going to go too deep into it because we haven't ever drafted it, and we didn't want to spend a whole lot of time going through like a proper format review. There's tons of content out there you can check out on Khans of Tarkir. We're getting the full set. It's not a remastered version of the set.
That's
so
cool.
Any of the old sort of articles or videos or whatever will be just as informative as they were when they were released. On the like short end of the conversation, to make it kind of quick, you can kind of do whatever you want. It's a wedge set, so the enemy wedges are in. So you get like Jeskai, Mardu, Abzan, I think Sultai's in there.
Teamer.
And Teamer, right. So you can kind of do anything amongst those three wedges. There are still two color decks, and you'll want to draft the two colors that kind of let you play either of the of two wedges. So black white, for example, is a good one because it lets you pivot into Mardu. It lets you play Abzan. So you can kind of be flexible in that way. But you can also play four and five color decks. There are dual lands at common, the old life gain lands. There are tri lands at uncommon. So you can kind of do whatever you want. Warriors is a big one to look at. Black white warriors is a big deck. Morph is in the set. If you're not familiar with morph mechanic, you can basically play a three mana 2/2 for just generic three mana, and then you can flip it into whatever the actual creature is for a specific cost. And usually those cards will have effects when they morph or when they flip face up, they do something special. It's supposed to be a really, really fun set. There are a few cards that are total traps. Tygom Scheming and Lens of Clarity are two that I recall being just like, never put them in your decks. They're not worth playing, even though they look like they do a lot of good work. In any case, hope that's fun. It should spice things up a bit while we're waiting for Karlov Manor and kind of over LCI. If you're still enjoying LCI, great. Keep doing so. It's going to be around at least until Karlov Manor drops, but Cons is coming, so very excited about that.
Yeah, you've done one more Cons draft than I have. I've done exactly zero, so I'm very excited. This looks like the type of set that I'm going to have a lot of fun in.
That said, because one new set's not enough, apparently, these days, we've already started getting Karlov Manor spoilers. So Murders at Karlov Manor is the next set dropping in January. And yeah, we've already started getting spoilers, so we're going to take some time here to talk through some of the spoilers that we've seen so far. We have already started seeing some of the signpost uncommons, which is kind of cool. So we'll talk through some of those and get some ideas on what those sort of archetypes are looking to do.
Let's not bury the lead here. Go ahead.
All right, so our first card here is Aliquis Proft, Master Sleuth. This is one white blue for a 3/3 legendary human detective at Mythic. And it's Vigilance, and when Aliquis Proft, Master Sleuth enters the battlefield, investigate. So that means you create a clue token, which, as a reminder, are artifacts that have the activated ability of pay two generic mana, sack it, draw a card. And then Aliquis Proft also has X white blue blue tap, sack a clue. You draw X cards and gain X life. They just slapped Sphinx's Rev on this creature, made you get the little extra cost of needing to sacrifice a clue. And he's a legend, so you know I'm making a commander deck around this guy. This is just me on a card for sure.
Yeah, this is about as stand in a card as I've ever seen Zach get. Like, this is this is pretty much it.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I got a treat too. I got a novice inspector. It's no Thraben Inspector. There was some discoursing around why they didn't just have Thraben Inspector go through an omen path, given that that's a thing now. But it is novice inspector. It's white for a 1/2 ETB investigate, and it's great. It is a human too, so I guess if that matters for any humans decks out there. But I love Thraben Inspector. I love clue sets. And I'll be honest, when I first heard of this set, I wasn't super stoked. I was looking at like, it's Ravnica, but not the thing everyone loves about Ravnica. Bold choice, not having this be guilds focused. So I have to give them props for that. They should have just told me it'd be a clue set. I would have been like, all right, you know.
I mean, it's called murder. You knew it was a murder mystery. How could you not expect clues to be in it?
Oh, yeah, I guess I forgot about that thing where there's a clue tie-in board game.
Right. Also, I know exactly why they didn't reprint the Thraben Inspector.
Why is that?
Because this is the first set they've used the subtype detective.
Oh, okay. So they got to beef up the detective numbers.
Right. They're definitely going to be cards that care about. Actually, I shouldn't. This is the first set that uses the subtype detective. The Doctor Who. Whatever they're called, Secret Lair did have detectives in it, but this is the first like real set that has detectives. So I imagine they actually just wanted a card that had the subtype detective, and Thraben Inspector doesn't have that. So
yeah, that's fair. Another cool one that we got was Aurelia the Law Above. This is maybe This is the type of rare that I see and I know I'm never going to be able to pass. Red, white, 4/4 angel at rare. She's legendary, of course. It's Aurelia. Flying vigilance haste. So just, you know, smack down, start beating. Kind of reminds me of like an Archangel Avacyn. Whenever a player attacks with three or more creatures, you draw a card. Red, white, card draw. I'm so in. I wish to say you and target opponent drew a card. That's the only way this could get any better. Because then no one would take it, and they just wheel it to me, and I could just take as many of these as I wanted every draft.
That's true.
And then it also says, whenever a player attacks with five or more creatures, Aurelia the Law Above deals 3 damage to each of your opponents, and you gain 3 life. So she helixes if
five. I just realized this says whenever a player attacks, not whenever Aurelia attacks. Oh my gosh. Yep.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Aurelia.
Why is this a rare and Alquist Proft is a mythic? Why?
I mean, obviously they wanted me to have more of my pet card than you of your pet card in the average draft format. That's clearly just how it goes, right? Some cool lands got spoiled. These sort of like MC Escher impossible lands were sort of like a cityscape, but with impossible architecture. I like it. Nice little variation on the full arts.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough to knock the LCI ones off of the top of my list as best basics ever, but these are quite good looking. But we're getting some really nice flavor in this set with our next card here, Meddling Youths. This is 3 red white for a 4/5 human detective at uncommon with haste. So this is our red white signpost. And it also says whenever you attack with 3 or more creatures, investigate. So this one is whenever you attack, not whenever a player attacks. But clearly red white is looking to do this, like, cares about 3 or more creatures attacking thing. Mm-hmm. And then the flavor text is, well, if it isn't mean old Mr. Larchbottom, who's always been so eager to have the only dumpling stall in Oxblood Alley. This is they're a clear like play unmasking. On. Yeah, they're like taking the mask off. This is a clear play on Scooby-Doo. And even the alt art for it is just hilarious. The alt art has slightly different flavor text, which the alt art, by the way, is pretty cool. The new like alt art frame or whatever makes it look like part of a dossier from like a detective's thing. But that's the cool. The flavor text for the alt frame is basically, it's like a description as if it was part of a dossier breaking down the profile of the character. But it says, chaotic but surprisingly fearless, often seen in the company of a strangely intelligent hound.
Oh, come on. All right. That's pretty great. I hadn't seen that yet. That's really funny. I was looking. I can't quite tell, like, the species of... I can't tell if it was, like, a little thing, or is that someone's fist that's next, like, above the maybe Daphne insert character who's kind of there on the right?
Yeah, that's the guy's fist. Yeah.
Hard to tell, but... Either way, 5 mana, 4/5 haste, like, that's kind of scary just by itself.
Yeah, and I mean, by turn 5 in a red-white deck, if you don't have 2 other creatures on the board, you're probably not doing it right. So, like, this is probably, in a lot of cases, 5 mana, 4/5 haste ETB investigate, functionally.
Yeah, pretty much. Big fan of this one. Curious Cadaver is our blue black vector signpost. It's a 2 blue black for a 3/1 flying. It's a zombie detective. Sure, why not? And it has, whenever you sacrifice a clue, return Curious Cadaver from your graveyard to your hand. Jeez, that's strong.
Yeah. I mean, clues are not going to be hard to come by in this set. Investigate seems to be all over the place. So this is going to be very annoying.
Yeah. I mean, this is great with self-mill. If you just dump this into your graveyard, crack a clue, get it back. It trades really well. I mean, 3 power flyer for 4. It does trade down with a bunch of things as well. This thing is sort of like a trading engine, right? It's a 3/1. So it'll trade with a 1/1 flyer, but also with a 4/3 flyer. Good thing to keep an eye on. And it also, it'll just keep coming back. Right, but when you're in the late game with a blue black opponent and you see them play like another spell that makes a clue, and you're like, oh, now they get the flyer back, and it's just the whole world. Because what do you do, kill it again, and then they just save a clue to crack? This thing is just going to keep coming back forever.
I kind of wish this was like one of those, almost like the skeleton effect where like it would ETB, it would, sorry, not ETB, but it would come back from the graveyard to the battlefield tapped.
Yeah.
I imagine there are just going to be way too many clues for that to be reasonable. That'd in this be way set.
Too good.
But, also this is another one with great flavor text. Apparently Kellen's back because he's going to be in every set for the next 3 years. But yeah, the flavor text is, when you said I could learn a lot from a corpse, I have to admit I wasn't expecting it to lecture me on forensic procedure. Because it's a zombie detective. That's, I love it.
Our next one here looks kind of scary for maybe constructed formats, maybe Commander 2.
Yeah, that's Gleaming Gear Drake. It's blue-red for an artifact creature Drake at Uncommon. It's a 1-1, so again, this is our vector signpost for blue-red. 1-1 flyer for 2, and when Gleaming Gear Drake enters the battlefield, investigate. Whenever you sack an artifact, put a +1/+1 counter on Gleaming Gear Drake. So we haven't seen a card like this in a while. We used to have, like, Crackling Drake comes to mind, where, like, that, not quite this, but it would, like, scale pretty well with the game going on. This is going to grow very, very easily. It ETBs to give you the artifact to crack. So at worst, it's like a 4-mana 2/2 flyer, I guess, but it also draws you a card.
Yeah. I have a funny feeling there'll be other things to do with clues besides just pay 2 and sack them. So
right.
This is going to care about any artifact sacking. Treasures are basically evergreen at this point. Sacking a treasure puts a counter on this, which is kind of scary. And in constructed, you know, who knows what people are going to do with this? There's like blood tokens and all sorts of other things that are laying around. Like bauble. It's kind of cute with this. Yeah, Gear Drake, I have a feeling this is going to be a familiar face in Magic for a while. And last but not least here, a card that needs no introduction, Lightning Helix is back. Red, white, deal 3, gain 3 to any target. Awesome. Love this card. I am stoked to play red white in this set because of the cards we've seen so far.
If Burn becomes a real deck in standard, I may start playing some RCQs.
Yeah, dude, there's Lightning Helix. It's already a real deck.
Shock got reprinted too.
All right. That's, you know, that's a bunch of face damage right there. You don't need much more.
All right. So that's it for kind of our spoilers, early spoilers. Keep an eye in the Discord on our spoilers channel for more kind of discussions on these spoilers as they come out. More to come on that.
We've got some interesting bans to chat about this week. It dropped on Monday. Now the big one is Limited. Now they don't ever do this. This is pretty big. Limited, no bans. Few things can continue as normal, so you know, just go ahead and skip about 2 minutes ahead if that's all you cared about. No changes to any limited formats, but standard actually had no change as well. What really is interesting for those that dabble in the cursed constructed formats like Pioneer and Modern, Pioneer saw some interesting bans. Karn the Great Creator, which was the linchpin of the mono green deck. I always love reading through the reasoning in the ban announcements, because they always go really, really deep. And the reasoning behind Karn was exactly what you'd expect in Pioneer. It just allows Mono Green to have too wide of an arsenal. And it's just so ubiquitous that Karn can basically do it all. And without Karn, maybe Green will be pushed to investigate some slightly more different avenues, maybe more along the lines of like Elves or a different ramp strategy. But Karn was just... It was just too generically good in every scenario. The toolbox it provided was just absurd. Geological Appraiser got banned. That's right, the card from LCI. For those that hadn't heard, there was a Pioneer deck going around where the only card that cost less than 3, or less than 4, I guess, in the deck would be Clone Effects. So Clone Effects, it would copy the Appraiser to make another Appraiser, to make another Appraiser, to make another Appraiser, and... Yeah, once that happened, it was basically a turn 4 win once the Appraiser was in play, because then you'll eventually cascade into an Imidane's Recruiter, and then you can give them all haste and swing for a trillion damage. So that got banned. There is a Quintorious version of this deck as well, and also a Carnosaur or whatever that thing is called. There's a version of that as well, too. But those ones, they're a little more susceptible to be punished because they're more like turn 5-6 combos. Thalia interacts pretty profitably with them, and counter spells as well. So those people aren't quite as worried about. And a big unbanned in Pioneer as well. Smuggler's Copter is unbanned. This one I'm suspicious of. Smuggler's Copter, for those who haven't played with the card, it is just too good. So it's going to become evergreen very quickly. If you want to get some good magic stocks, you know, probably wouldn't hurt to get your copters.
Yeah, they finally let this one out of the garage. It's been a long time since Smuggler's Copter was playable, and well, it is now. So, yeah, it's a $10 card already.
It was like two at the start of the week.
Yeah, and I expect it only to go up at this point. Yep. Because it hasn't seen real play yet, because the ban announcement happened just a couple of days ago, or the unban announcement, as it were. But yeah, I mean, it's a ridiculous card. It was banned for a very good reason. Hopefully the format today is amenable to it, so it doesn't have to get rebanned immediately, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold my breath. Smuggler's Copter is, however good you think Smuggler's Copter is, it's even better than that. And in Modern, Fury was banned. Perfect. Just they picked correctly on this one. I'm very happy about this. And not just because it, well, I've been playing Scamblade, for those who've been popping in Discord. I play a black-white scam deck, using Grief and Solitude and Ephemerate to really just shred my opponent's hands. And then it's got like a Stoneforge package and Gix and Orcish Bowmasters, and man, it's a cool deck. Anywho, very glad they didn't ban Grief or Solitude, because it would render basically my whole deck inert. But Fury, I think, was the biggest problem in the format. It just gave a couple decks, both Rakdos control decks, it just gave them such flexibility against the early creature matchups, and render a lot of early creatures and X1s just totally unplayable. So by banning Fury, they were functionally soft unbanning a bunch of one mana spells and creatures that just couldn't be played with Fury rampant in the format. Just getting to divvy up 8 damage on turn 3 or 4 is just more than a lot of decks could handle. And Up the Beanstalk was banned, which I'm also kind of happy to see. Beans was just, I mean, if you get to evoke a Fury or evoke a Solitude with a Beans in play, you still draw the cards. So Beans was just not really, believe it or not, Modern players weren't actually tapping 6 mana to cast a 6 drop and draw a card off Beans. That wasn't how it worked. And for those that may be thinking, oh, Ben's just happy because they banned Fury and not one of his cards, Fury was actually my best matchup. my black-white scam, its best matchup was against Rakdos scam. I had like an 80% win rate on MTGO. I'm bummed that I'm not playing against Rakdos every single match anymore. It was free tickets. It was free play points. So anywho, a bit of an update on the format. I'm going to be playing in an RCQ this weekend for Modern. So kind of excited to play in a wide open format. I'm hoping people bring a bunch of like off meta decks, and then my very tuned, admittedly pretty strong deck is just going to floor him. So that's what I'm hoping for, at least.
All right, so next we've got a few cube updates. The DraftShaft cube has gone through its latest iteration. We try not to make too many changes to it, but we typically do about 3 cards in and out every set. A little bit less than that because we didn't really do an update for WoW, but this is a combined kind of WoW LCI update. Nothing too crazy, just a few minor adjustments to kind of improve quality of the cube overall. Biggest change I would say is Hymn of the Wilds coming out, because that deck was stupid.
yeah. And this was like a quality of life improvement, where Hymn of the Wilds, as per the feedback that I received, Hymn of the Wilds was either just kind of bad, and the deck, I mean, I know the deck that crafted ended up going 1-2. So I beat the deck myself, and I did have like a pretty solid showing against it, although it was too far to the extremes in either case. It was either not good, because that thing says you just can't put instant sorceries in your deck, but your creatures cost less, which may lead you to build a pretty wacky and sometimes non-functional deck against certain types of opponents, or it's just way too good and it just flattens your opponent clean. So neither side was really having a great time with Hymn of the Wild, so we swapped it for Emissary. Pretty much the same thing, except it's a lifelinker instead. and you know, it's new. Lunar Frenzy is gone, replaced by Dreadmaw's Ire, gives red some more flexibility against artifacts. Baral's Expertise is out. It was sort of like a blue board wipe. This one I do like. Expertise could eventually pop back in, but Extraordinary Journey, I wanted to try out. That was a cool, really interesting design from Wilds. And Glorious Sunrise, which is sort of like a generic green rare draft chaff, yes, but swapped it out for Malamet Battleglyph just to up the spell and interaction count. I realized the green was a little low on fight spells, so I wanted to get a new fight spell in there for a green to play around with. And Glorious Sunrise is one of those generic draft chaff cards that, you know, it doesn't really have a great home. It's just kind of fine everywhere, so it's good nowhere. And that one, I think, no one will miss. Right, now to really get into the rapid fire miscellaneous potpourri. First of all, on MTGO, the Alpha Frog Cube has gone up. That is a great cube. It is vintage cube, but it's not your typical vintage cube. Those who have been watching LSV's draft videos, they've been playing a lot of the Alpha Frog Cube, and they've also been having the Alpha Frog Invitational, which is a pretty fun little Twitch live stream going up every once in a while. They do it weekly, sort of like an invitational thing where they have pros come and play this cube. It's a good cube, and I know Moto's scary. Trust me, if you're thinking, oh man, I can't get on Moto, like I gotta download a new thing and learn how it works. I'll be honest, I still barely understand how the deck function works, but if you're just trying to draft, you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. And just get on there, play some cube, it will be worth the setup cost. Oh, and Alchemy for Ixalan is out.
Cool. So we got a new format called Timeless. This is another constructed format, but it's an interesting one because it teeters on something we already had. So Timeless is a new 60 card format. It's a non-rotating constructed format. Every card that you can collect on Arena is legal. So it's another Arena only format. But every card you can collect on Arena is legal. That includes Alchemy cards, but they're using original tabletop printings of cards that are printed in paper. So non-Alchemy cards will not have the Alchemy versions of them in the cube or in the format. It's the original tabletop printing. But then there also are only Alchemy cards, the ones that never had a paper print, will also be legal. So this kind of overlaps a bit with Historic, but the gist is that there are more cards legal in this format than in Historic. Hmm. And that's kind of it.
So that thing Historic was supposed to be, now Timeless is.
I guess I imagine they're gonna phase out Historic eventually. I think that would end up going away.
Maybe with the card pool just getting larger and larger, they think this is safe to do. I saw there were only like two or three bans, and they were just like the really degenerate combos. Like Channel got banned.
No, they're restricted.
Oh.
There are really? Three cards on the restricted list. There aren't any bans yet.
Restricted?
Yeah.
That is appealing. Okay, yeah. Okay. All right. This has caught my attention. I didn't realize they were restricted.
Yeah, they're restricted. Right. It seems like this was born out of the Historic no ban list event. And they took a ton of feedback from that, realized there were a couple of cards that were still pretty degenerate, and so they threw those on the restricted list, and we'll see where it goes.
So, for those that don't know, restricted, you can only play the one copy,
right?
Which I think is pretty weird. This doesn't come up in Magic very often, besides the really old formats. It doesn't overlap a draft very often. That's actually pretty interesting. All right, I will give this format a shot because I can put Channel in a deck and do something really nasty with it.
And technically, because they are allowing Alchemy cards in the format, you can get the Moxen in some capacity, as I understand it.
Okay, Oracle the Alpha. I tweeted this and it got a ton of likes under their announcement post that they should just put the Power 9 into this format because they are on Arena through Oracle the Alpha, which is this 3-mana 2/3 flyer. It ETBs and it shuffles the Power 9 into your deck. So these cards are coded into the game already. I would settle even for like an Arena vintage cube draft where you just get the chance of opening a Mox or a Time Twister or a Lotus. Imagining, just picture someone who's never touched vintage cube before. They go, oh yeah, the Arena is pretty fun. Like I play limited every once in a while. Listener, this might be what you do. And you open up your pack of cube and there's a black Lotus there. and you read it and you go, oh my god, this is the best card in Magic. And you would then get to experience why after you cast a turn one Goldspan Dragon or some nonsense like that, and just really go to town on an opponent. Personally, I believe they should do this. If they're doing Timeless, why hold anything back, right? Just put the Power Nine in.
Yeah, also there's that other Garth One Eye, I think, is also on Arena, which generates Lotuses. So that's another way to do that.
I think so.
Anyway, Timeless is interesting. We'll see how it goes. I may give that one a shot. I'm not too sure. I've still never touched Alchemy in any capacity, and I don't think I'm interested in doing so, but we'll see.
Yeah.
All right, one last really fun, cool thing. There's a new tournament for the Magic Fest coming up. It's on December 8th, so the day this episode releases. Unfortunately, limited to U.S. players only, but it's a Festival in a Box Chaos Sealed. So you open, it's best of one Chaos Sealed. You open 9 packs, one from each of the following sets. There's Midnight Hunt, Crimson Vow, Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, Streets of New Capenna, Dominaria United, Brothers War, Phyrexia, All Will Be One, March of the Machine, and Wild of Eldraine. So the last 9 sets, basically.
Yeah.
You either get to 6 wins, or you have to get to 6 wins before 2 losses, and it's cost 5,000 gems to enter.
Jeez, that's
steep. But if you get the 6 wins, you get a Festival in a Box, which is kind of crazy. Like, they'll just ship you a Festival in a Box, which is awesome.
Yeah, those things are like hundreds of dollars worth of value. I think you can buy them. I don't know what their exact MSRP is, but it's up there. And for getting 5 wins, you get your 5,000 gems back. That's pretty cool. 4 gets you 2,000, and 0 to 3, you get nothing. So this is a high risk, high reward thing. This is the type of thing I think I'm going to enter exactly once. Or wait a minute. I think you can actually only enter it exactly once.
I believe
right?
So. Yeah, the wording on that was a little bit weird. I couldn't quite tell if you could only enter once or if you could only win once, but I think you can only enter one time.
Interesting. Maybe no, I don't know. I got nothing. This does make sense, though. This is like a pretty special event, but honestly, arena events with real world prizes are, you know, I guess I have a little bit of experience with those.
This guy
winning, you know, just a little
bit. That was like a year ago. Let it go.
Look, I'll admit I didn't have the strongest performance at the LCI Sealed. I didn't even day 2 that one. But my last one, the Arena Cube one, I almost won the max amount of stuff you can without cashing. So I'm still on these Arena Opens. I'm smelling a cash pretty soon. Maybe Karlov Manor will have better luck in store for me. Look, there's a Thraben Inspector in that set. Of course I'm going to have fun with it.
All right, on to our listener question of the week. Just kidding. We're not going to do one because the holiday mailbag is coming up, and we'd rather you put your questions in the holiday mailbag. So jump into the Discord, drop your questions in the 2023 holiday mailbag channel, and we will answer those at the end of the month and get to as many of them as we possibly can. So, on to our Teferi Tybalt, which is our Roses and Thorns style segment, where Ben and I share a high and a low from the past week. So, Ben, why don't you kick us off? How's your week been?
Pretty good. I am more exhausted than usual. It's been a pretty long school week already, despite it only being Wednesday. My school had this thing called Challenge Day, which was pretty cool. It was sort of like a day of social emotional activities where a subset of teachers and students got pulled out of class. They're probably like 30 teachers and 100 some students, and just kind of spent the whole day doing these like team building activities. But also the goal was to like tear down emotional walls between students and sort of like give people the opportunity to be vulnerable and help the students see each other as people, help the students see teachers as people that are there for them. It was a great day. A lot of big emotions. And as someone who's been like a resident assistant and orientation leader in the past, this was well within my wheelhouse, nothing I hadn't seen before, but I was really happy with how a lot of students that I knew were so open and vulnerable and trying to have like a day of emotional connection. So it was great. That being said, it was 8 hours long and there were very few breaks. And as one of the facilitators, it was exhausting. And I feel like I still haven't caught up from that because it was both physical activity and, you know, you were listening to people telling their life stories, many of which were tragic. So this does fall entirely under Teferi. I guess a far more minor Teferi is that I tried some new hair products this week, recommended nice. By a coworker. I've seen some profile pictures in Discord. I know some of y'all out there have the shoulder length like I do. Right now, I'm a pretty big fan. Lus is the LUS is the company. They're hard to find. I had to order mine online. Relatively cheap compared to some of the good high end hair and stuff out there. But their three step process has been pretty good. Gotta recommend that. Not sponsored. Lus, if you hear this, somehow I could not imagine how we would absolutely eat up that Lus money. I will shill for Lus any day of the week, but
what better,
that's all the free shilling.
Honestly though, like what better product to like what better company to sponsor a magic podcast than a personal hygiene company?
Look, I mean, there's been the stereotype for ages, but I get compliments on my hair, and you know, if anyone's gonna do the work to counter this stereotype that magic players are these basement dwellers with long unkempt hair, I guess. How about a basement dweller with really nice flowing silken hair? How about that for a stereotype?
That or like Old Spice, hit us up.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we would do that too. we'll lean into the meme here a bit. Tybalt, this week it's been just wild busy. I've been skipping the gym, and honestly, my gym a day draft, or what was I calling those? Just regular gym drafts. When I'm enjoying the set less, I'm a lot less excited to go and draft at the gym. So maybe I found a bit of a flaw in my daily gym drafting here. If I don't want to play LCI, then I'm kind of de-incentivized to go to the gym. Honestly, I've had a bit of a sore throat this week. I hope it didn't come through too much on the recording.
No, I think what's up with you? Yeah, I guess my Teferi Karloff manner is looking cool. I'm kind of excited for it. It's going to be cool to be at Ravnica without doing like the typical guild thing. Yeah. I was actually thinking about that with the Gear Drake thing. Yeah, the Gleaming Gear Drake. It doesn't feel very, is it, from an art perspective, or even really, I mean, I guess the ability maybe feels is it E, but it's going to be nice to be on Ravnica and not actually have to stick to the usual guild identity. That said, my Tybalt, I'm so sick of spoilers every week. Can we just have a break? Like,
yeah.
I'm so exhausted.
What, Doctor Who wasn't enough for you? There was a Jurassic World. And then there was the Lord of the Rings thing.
There was Lord of the Rings Part 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, and you know, don't forget, you know, Karloff Manor coming up, but also LCI
and Cons of Tarkir and
Cold and Cons, like
that is, everything we just mentioned has happened in a 4 month span.
Hardly, it's been like 4 weeks for most of those. Doctor Who like just dropped. I don't know. I we were talking about this in the pre-show, and there's not a lot of downsides to this besides just the mental toll, right? More cards.
No, that's it. Yeah,
for more people, you know, making more diverse products for more different types of people that want to enjoy things in different ways. That tends to be a good thing, but like,
I'm just tired.
When does the train slow down?
Yeah.
Right. I don't want the train to stop. Not at all. I want the train to keep going. But like, I guess when the train goes too fast, it's hard to, you know, appreciate the beauty of the trees as they whiz past. Is that a good analogy?
Sure. Yeah. Everything outside is just a blur eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of how it feels. I don't know. I'm curious to hear what the listener thinks of this, because I know we as content creators.
just embrace it. It's been 4 years.
I guess we engage with it differently than the average person who plays Magic. So I wonder if other people feel the same pressure, or if it's easier to tune it out when you're not, you know, actively studying to keep things up and make sure your podcast is informative for people. Not that ours
maybe
is.
Maybe if they, well, yeah, fair enough. Maybe if they just keep printing the sets at the same pace, or God forbid, a faster pace.
No, thank you.
Draft Chaff just implodes and we become a movie podcast.
Yeah, we have the fallback option, right?
All right. Well, that about does it for us this week. Thank you so much for listening. Definitely check out the Discord if you haven't already. Again, we've got a whole bunch of stuff in there right now that's really relevant. Spoilers channel, of course, our Trophy Dex channel as per usual. The 2023 holiday mailbag, we would love to see more questions in there. We're getting a ton already, but would be great to get as many as we can. And again, anybody who puts a question in that channel will be entered into kind of a raffle for some arena codes. And yeah, you can check that out. The link to that is in the episode description as well as on our Twitter page. If you'd like to support the show directly, you can do so on Patreon at patreon.com/draftchaffpod. Again, huge thanks to everybody who continues to support us over there.
Especially Jason.
Especially Jason. Thanks, Jason. You're the best. We've got our stickers coming out soon. We'll have some kind of promo pictures of those coming out shortly. Our pins for those who backed the Patreon in the relaunch window are coming soon as well. More updates on that to come. And yeah, we really just can't thank you guys enough. All right. Well, thanks, folks. We'll catch you next week.
Okay. I do have a rec. It's not quite a movie, but I guess the episodes are all about movie length. Have you seen anything about Blue Eye Samurai going around?
Nope.
Okay. It's the new Netflix hotness. I should preface this with some things. It's violent. It is graphic. It is brutal. It is awesome. So cool. Just like, I don't want to give anything away. I think this is one that's best to go into blind, but as the name implies, it follows a blue-eyed samurai in, I guess, not quite ancient Japan, but quite a long time ago Japan. I really don't want to say much, but if I had to describe some things that reminds me of, there are some obvious draws to other great samurai show out there. I mean, Samurai Jack is one that comes to mind, as it kind of follows this single lone wandering samurai on a quest for a certain thing. It has some, you know, other similarities, but beyond that. What's that guy's name? Hold on. I've been watching some of the Akira Kurosawa movies, some of the old, just ridiculously complex and cool samurai movies from that era, and I'm definitely picking up on some Kurosawa influence too. I mean, that's sort of as fundamental as it gets in that genre. As far as like the combat and the action, those that have watched Primal, I think this kind of plays into where there's some it doesn't hold back when it comes to that. And as far as the storytelling and the writing and the character development, so far the only thing that really comes to mind, I'd put it on the echelon of like Westworld season one, where you're introduced to a whole bunch of characters with competing interests, and none of them are immediately made out to be the quote unquote good guy or the quote unquote bad guy. You see people that are taking a whole lot of actions that are both good and bad, and you're instantly met with these very complex, very human individuals who have wants, and they have motivations, and they have these actions that they're willing to do, and you can already start to see how it's going to put them on a collision course with one another. Just maybe one more recommendation out of all this. There's a battle scene in the first episode, and a moment when a character does a thing, and you'll know it when you get to it, that had me just sitting up in my chair screaming at the TV like, oh my God, no freaking way. They're going there. They're doing that. Like, man, if you want a good watch and let's just say not one to watch with kids or parents around, Blue Eye Samurai is where it's at.